Greetings, comrades, and welcome to the Eastern Border. Now, you can all, listening to this episode, can pat yourself on the back and state that you truly live in one of those days that will go down in history. I've been up for more than 24 hours at this point. I've been just following the events, and I'm pretty sure that by the point of this recording, even more has happened. Because you see, the masks have fallen. I told you guys that one serious Ukrainian victory would be one massive loss for Putin, and that would be his first one that he couldn't deny. And this has happened. Now, what will the consequences be? We do not know. However, the Ukrainian counteroffensive has gone on to be ridiculously more successful than originally planned. Everyone's coping with this, and it's just been going on. And I am just recording this episode during the point where I am... Where the news of constant Ukrainian advance have finally stopped coming in into such a rapid pace where they've actually, I think, might have taken a bit of a break here. So what happened, basically, was that during the night, the city of Kupiansk was taken. That was the beginning. And, Kupiansk is super important because that's the main railway hub here. See, Ukrainian plan in general in this Kharkiv direction is to encircle about 10,000 troops, basically cutting them off from supplies and making sure that they can only retreat over the river with, well, no bridges on it. So we're talking a massive encirclement, and it looks like they'll pull this one off. At worst case, they're going to get a bunch of territory and these guys are going to have to retreat. Kupiansk was big. The evening started with this, and... And by now, basically, Kupiansk has all been taken, but at the point, you know, here's more Girkin about this, because Girkin and all the Russian media went crazy about this. Here's what Girkin had to say, quote, "The abandonment of the western part, approximately two-thirds of the city of Kupiansk by our troops, was confirmed. They now started saying as if this was the correct tactical decision, which is to go retreat beyond the water line and organize the defense there. For reference, at this time of the year, the Oskol River can be crossed on foot almost anywhere, and is not at all a serious obstacle for tracked and wheeled all-terrain vehicles. Let me also remind you that the corresponding settlements, Severodonetsk for example, separated from the mainland by a river floodplain, they were stubbornly defended by the armed forces of Ukraine for many weeks. On the face, this is an ongoing acute operational crisis on a wide sector of the front line, which has already turned into a major defeat. At the moment, our side can only discuss how to prevent it from deepening further and prevent the escalation of the operational defeat into a strategic one. Although in general it already has. The enemy has already won for the Battle of Initiative. Now we should talk about preventing the armed forces of Ukraine from encircling and destroying large formations of our troops. And yes, sadly, I expected all of this. P.S. Unverified data is coming through about attacks and allegedly enemy breakthroughs in the Liman and Lyshansk directions. Donetsk is under heavy shelling." So this happened first. Let me nicely inform you that at this point that we're talking, not only Liman and Lyshansk have been taken. Liman definitely, Lyshansk I am 80, 85, 90% sure at this point. Because, again, when I'm recording this. However, as I'm recording this, the other one-third, the across the river side of Kupiansk, also has been taken, because, you know, Ukrainians just crossed that tiny river, pushed off block posts. That's happening right now as we speak. I'll probably talk about that in tomorrow's episode. However, this wasn't the end of the fun, because the really bad thing was that a bit later, a couple of hours later, here was another nice little report by Girkin, which I'll allow, you know, to speak for itself. Quote, "According to a number of reports, our troops have hastily left Izium. If so, and it is confirmed by a number of sources, then, 1. That is a good thing. In conditions where yesterday the last road was under direct fire from the enemy and a danger of direct cutoff, to risk a complete encirclement and subsequent inevitable defeat would be the height of adventurism bordering a crime. 2. A hasty retreat will inevitably lead to heavy losses of the retreating troops and equipment, and, which is sensitive, in people. 3. All equipment accumulated on the spot will be abandoned. That is, after leaving the cauldron, our troops will find themselves with an acute shortage of ammunition, fuel, and everything necessary, which means they will not be able to immediately enter the battle. 4. Despite this, the withdrawal of the encircled grouping is a strategically correct decision, despite all the associated losses. The preserved units and formations after reorganization and replacement will again be able to join the battle. But the question of the perpetrators of the encirclement and the defeat is not at all removed. Now, we'll get to the guilty people, because at this point, after Izium also falls and everyone's panicking, even Wagner Group has started panicking. The whole partisan activity is going up. We'll talk about what this whole thing means after this. I'm not going to leave you hanging. Right now, I just want to give you more tasty comments from the Russian side, because they have started blaming each other. And, how would the Russian Ministry of Defense comment on the situation? Well, now, they first stated that they have shot down some rockets of HIMARS, right? And then they stated also 4 things. The Ministry of Defense states the following. 1. In order to achieve the goals of the special military operation, a decision was made to regroup troops in the Balakia and Izium regions to build up strength in the Donetsk direction. 2. An operation was carried out to curtail and transfer the Izium-Balakia group of troops to the territory of the DPR. 3. A number of distraction and demonstration activities were carried out with the designation of the real actions of the troops. 4. Destroyed more than 2,000 militants and mercenaries. As you can imagine, after all of this night's panic and after all the data that we've seen, pro-Russian, pro-Ukrainian, independent, like everyone, okay? Because I've been living this at this point, and this is one of the most intense days of work that I've had during this whole war, because we're back into early war period of activities, boys. Basically, this comes from Wagner Group Associated Channel, and this is Wagner Group and other pro-war, kind of Girkin-like buddies, talking about the whole situation, about this response of the Ministry of Defense, because they were hoping for some active results. You know, this is a major loss. They have to regroup. And again, Girkin posted things that Russia should do, and he's always been a pragmatic, well, asshole, but still pragmatic. Now, commenting on this new statement about how Ministry of Defense of Russia is reacting to all this massive failure of their army, of an unprecedented scale. If this encirclement actually happens, and then this is going to be the largest military defeat ever suffered by Russia, mind you. So, the response, quote, "They're taking the piss. Dear representatives of the Ministry of Defense of the Russian Federation, employees of the Department of Information and Mass Communications, servicemen of the 5th Main Operational Directorate, duty shift to the Center for Rapid Response to Informational Security Threats. We know that you're reading us. We know that the Rybar Telegram channel, the Gray Zone channels, the military informant, Andrei Medvedev, Starshe Edi, Povernuchi na Vojne, Pisma Yaroslavia, and many, many others who allow themselves to speak critically about the course of the military operation are, in your opinion, traitors, provocateurs, fakers, liberals, and accomplices of the Kiev regime sitting on the salary of the Ukrainian Information Psychological Operations Center. We know that we are all on your blacklist because we are the most inconvenient for you, because we are not in the line with the party. We understand and accept this. It's normal that outside of the system, critics are not considered, and you pretend that they do not exist. And it is true that this has become normal in the current configuration of the system. But let's be frank. Now is not the moment when you can be silent and not say anything. Now is not the moment when you can arrange an information vacuum and work with some kind of hybrid methods, bringing information to the population in doses and tiny streams. We ask you, please take the information situation on the front into your own hands. No need to act on the principle, prohibit, and say nothing. This is very detrimental to the course." And again, the madness just continues. Because, oh boy, the pro-mainstream guys who are all pro-Putin, who have always been going, everything's fine, you know, more mainstream Telegram channels, more mainstream operators, basically, after this whole situation, stated that, again, in their channels, basically, Girkin and the ilk like him are traitors, traitors and double-faced assholes who basically have spread out panic. Everything is fine. We're going to do a pincer. Everything is fine according to plan. The commanders know what they're doing. They should finally be arrested for spreading panic among the forces. All this stuff, etc. There's a bunch of swear words. Not enough time, and I'll have to do a full translation when I have the time for that. But yeah, this is kind of This is kind of crazy. So their response is now to basically yell for the government to start arresting Girkin and everyone else, even though, as you, my dear listeners, know, if Russia had actually listened to Igor Girkin in the early stages, then Russia probably would have won this. But the problem is they don't, and Girkin becomes a duber. That's funny. But all in all, it's been a mess. Russian propaganda is in shambles. Russian frontline is in shambles. I'm still following on what's going to happen here. The Third Army Corps, the so-called reserves, half of them did not arrive. Half of them were smashed. Also, on the whole area, a lot of reinforcements were literally taken out like a couple of days ago and sent to Kherson Oblast. They didn't make it there, and now they're being forced to turn back. The whole apparatus of the command system is just done. Russia is burning through and using vulnerable transport helicopters, the Mi-26s, the large ones, to carry in something on the line. It's chaos. There is no organization. In a lot of cases, we hear reports about thousands of prisoners of war already. The mayor of Kherson Oblast, well, the Russian occupation mayor, has also declared an evacuation. Basically, the front has not stabilized, and how to portray this in military terms, Russia is facing a severe operational crisis, which is about to turn into a strategic one. Now, about some of the implications that are not exactly on the military front. Number one, partisan activity also has activated. For example, as I'm recording this in Mariupol, even local partisans have placed Ukrainian flags in a lot of places. A lot of local collaborationists and their referendum builders from United Russia, all these people have been blown up. A lot of partisan activity. Why? Because, you know, it's one thing to do partisan work when you're not sure how long you're going to be occupied and what's going to happen. It's another thing when, well, you know, hey, you'll probably get to be a hero for blowing up that one car or doing something like that. Partisan activity is increasing. Pro-Russian collaborationists are in panic and people are being way, way more active in this. There's a lot of support going on there. Basically, in the already occupied territories, I'm pretty sure that a lot of these people who are collaborationists after this will kind of rethink their position and either will, start sabotaging the whole situation from within or just escape to Russia. They'll try, at least. Because that could be the second phase of this. Because if the front line doesn't stabilize, then the support lines will also fall. And then there's going to be no one to support this whole army, because remember that you need this administration in the occupied areas. Because we have, so far, you know, you can clearly see that the Russian generals, they're not busy basically organizing the whole thing, and the logistics is just in shambles and terrible. And that's number one. The activity and morale of the Ukrainian troops is sky high. Meanwhile, the troops on the ground who read all these channels, because a lot of them are written by the troops on the ground, these pro-Russian ones, well, a lot of them are falling into depression, and the morale is very low, and the fact is that, they're mostly friendly, and the ideological ones are friends with Girkin and his pals, who are now also under attack, so there's an internal split, which is good, because like I said, this could start some toppling, and Putin's whole, you know, attitude and his whole system might drop down. Hey, even Margarita Simonyan, who normally was, kill all Ukrainians, this war is nothing, one of the cheap propagandists, even now she's kind of starting to write about, well, how about we just make some peace? Why does this have to be so tragic? It's gone, right? And on the other aspect of the war, one of the things that I've heard about why people didn't send Ukraine enough equipment is the fact that for these 6 months before this offensive, basically there was this doubt, uncertainty, if Ukraine could use this equipment well, if they could attack. We didn't know how Ukrainians would basically do in an assault. And now that they've shown that they can do brilliant things, according to best strategists, right? Arestovich yesterday stated on his whole thing that, well, this whole Pisk was the last achievement of the Russian army in the war. And I agree with him. Right now, I think this kind of kicks the bucket out of those who said, well, you know, we should be careful. What if it falls into Russian hands? No, it won't. Now it is clearly visible to everyone with half a brain that the investments that the Western allies are making to aid Ukraine are well received, well, you know, and basically only, well, victory now is determined only by the sheer amount of weapon systems that the West can supply to Ukraine. Otherwise, yeah, and I think that everyone's going to be, you know, it's really good to be on a winning side and show that you've supported someone, just like it's right now good to be a partisan or a non-collaborationist. Right now it's super high. So that's going to improve. Also, for example, people like Macron, who have been stated, you know, leave Putin with a face and maybe make concessions. Now that's also out of the window. This operation is just too successful. It's too big. And nope. What do you mean? Why make concessions if you can just give more tanks and have victory? Obviously. So that's another thing which is important of this war. Both I think that the support will increase. Also, obviously, more foreign volunteers will also come. Because you want to fight for the winning side. It's cool to support the winners, you see. We like to support the underdogs. We also like to support the winners. If the underdogs are winning, oh boy. This is not only a massive tactical victory, it's, like Girkin stated, this is an operational victory bordering on the strategic, which could easily turn into a strategic one. And I think it actually probably has. Now we just have to wait about the reaction inside of Russia itself and what's going to happen there. I don't know, Russian propaganda machine hasn't really, you know, started even reacting to all this situation. I'll probably know about what they say tomorrow, and I'm going to basically not sleep all night once again. I took a nap for about 2 hours during the day because I just passed out. But wow, busy times. Oh, another thing, 11th Army Corps of the Russian Army has been destroyed. 3rd Army Corps is under-equipped and under-trained, and a lot of them also have been damaged. This whole pincer movement thing, which I'm seeing on Twitter, a lot of Westerners who don't understand the situation and probably don't even speak Russian, they post this. I've seen tweets from these Russian supporters like, oh, I feel pity for Ukrainians, they're going to be pincered. Oh, no, not with this one. None of this were planned. I mean, and according to literally everyone on the whole group, except maybe, I don't know, even Anatoly Shadi, who's a very kind of pro-Russian person, none of them. I don't believe, there is literally no one except the on the grounds and the booth and everyone, no one believes that this is some sort of a genius pincer plan. Because again, the whole equipment has been abandoned. Ukraine has gotten so many tanks from the Zapad and West, it's quite insane. Like I said, this was crazy. I posted all this on Twitter. Please do follow me on Twitter, because in days like these, I do live updates there. But just wanted to make a whole kind of thing. Because you probably, if you listen to my show, you probably follow everything that's happening anyways. But here you go. Massive success, which is going to breed more success. Now, Russia, basically what they did last night was they called a Federation Council of Security meeting, which lasted for hours. And everyone was hoping on the Russian side that they would announce mobilization and everything. They didn't. They also never even mentioned nuclear weapons or anything like that. Right now, that's the number one thing that a Latvian foreign minister has stated, that this could happen. See, right now, I think Putin could panic and maybe try to do some blackmailing with nukes. I don't think he'll drop anything, but he could, you know, do a nuclear test somewhere, or blow something up. Now it's super important not to have panic on our own side and not to fall for this. Putin needs to be told clearly and with great efficiency that if he blows up anything, anywhere, then he's going to get a retaliation. Because there's no other way. I'm pretty sure he's going to do that. Shoigu, Kadyrov, all the situation. Apparently, Chechen local governments have demanded Putin to make Kadyrov the Minister of Defense. I don't think he's going to get that. I'm still, you know, in this chaos, this whole promotion of Kadyrov is going to go somewhere. Because, trust me, no one knows about what's going to happen there. And to be honest, no one cares about what's going to happen there. Also, 1,300 troops were sent in the southern direction, where, by the way, around Kherson, also heavy fights are happening, and there are rumors about some cities being retaken. Well, villages, mostly. There are no really that big points there. But yeah, I'm going to follow this. This is interesting, and we're seeing the victory that I think is breaking the morale and could eventually lead down to the downfall of Putin's credibility, which is why the propaganda is silent. Because this is probably the first time ever when someone's called Putin for the bluff and showed that he's not a great macho man, that he's a tiny little loser. No, and Putin doesn't hate anything more than being a tiny little loser. So there we go, we're going to work again and harder and provide more reports. Please follow me on Twitter at Eastern_Border. If you like the show, please consider becoming our patron, patreon.com/TheEasternBorder. Or you can also just do it via Twitter or Facebook, there are links there. in my profile. Yeah, of course, if you want to help us directly, then go to theeasternborder.lv, our webpage, where you can listen to the show ad-free, mind you. And just click the donate button there. That's going to go to for Ukrainian winter clothes. Or for the building of Ukraine, if things go in this direction. I mean, it's still going to go to charity into Ukraine. It's just that, if things continue like this, this is probably going to last for another 2 months or something. Well, that's the highly optimistic scenario. I still think that currently we are looking at a winter ending of the situation. We are. This is even more likely than I thought before. Yeah, because what happened today and this night had extended even my most optimistic scenarios that I had in my own head. Crazy. But yeah, I would be very happy if you would support the show, and also if you would tell about us to some other people, because during all this time, one thing that happened on Twitter also was that a lot of people pulled out all the tweets from all these analysts and experts who posted their stuff on the 23rd of February, those who stated that Ukraine would surrender, it would be an easy win for Kremlin, all these people. And on there, they have much more followers than I do and everything, and I sometimes think that maybe I should just also put an analyst on my profile. That would probably allow me to, be more carefree about the information that I give you. But as I'm not an analyst officially, I'm just a journalist, which means I kind of have to be accurate. Well, crazy times. I'll probably go back to doing some more work right now. До свидания, товарищи. And today, happiness is as mandatory as usual, and today is just double happiness, extra high morale. Wow. До свидания.